This is JimBinbo.com e-news number 295, the 20th of May, 2011. This e-news is read by Jim's text-to-speech robot, Jimbo, or Jimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items, and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. ABB resurrects Bailey DCS, CEO Joe Hogan admits mistake. About a month ago, the JimBinbo.com ABB weblog had this message. I was astounded at the way that ABB pretty much threw away its US installed base. The assumption upon ABB's part was that it would be possible to move customers away from Infinity to ABB's product line. Perhaps this is the way it works in Europe. However, in the US this just put Infinity's installed base into play with competitors. The main beneficiary was Emerson. They deserve kudos. They saw an opportunity and took advantage. Well, after 7 years of telling customers to move to its 800XA system, ABB CEO Joe Hogan led a reversal. Let's give him credit for doing that himself and resurrected the Bailey Symphony Harmony Infinity system. Joe Hogan conceded that the integration of LSIG Bailey and its Symphony products into ABB was not handled well. He admitted to being stunned by what ABB did to the LSIG Bailey Harmony and Melody platforms, because we thought we'd have a universal process automation platform that would take care of everything. So, said Hogan, ABB came to realize it needed to rescue the Symphony product line and bring it back as an integral piece of the ABB offering. The problem is that the installed base has been a happy hunting ground for all the control system competitors for over the last 7 years. Several of them offer their own products with well-thought-out migration strategies and integration offerings for Symphony users. Item 2. Inbound marketing in the automation industry. Outbound marketing, indiscriminate advertising to everyone, is broken. Disruptive technologies like blogs and social media, satellite radio, DVRs are making it difficult, if not impossible, to interrupt people with advertising messages. Today, what's needed is to reverse the outbound model, using inbound marketing with a variety of internet media to attract customers with content that reflects their wants and needs. How is the automation industry doing in this regard? I recently completed a series of inbound marketing evaluations for the web presence of 4 major automation product vendors, Rockwell, Honeywell, Yokogawa, and Emerson. The process scored 26 criteria, from 1 to 4, in 5 categories. Content, search engine optimization, social media presence, website conversions, and analytics. The aggregate scores were Content 2.5, Search Engine Optimization 2.4, Social Media Presence 1.9, Website Conversions 0.9, Analytics 3.0. Any score below 3 is problematic. Some conclusions reached from these evaluations were: most automation vendors have very poor homepages as they relate to inbound marketing. There is a lack of remarkable content and engagement. There is a high degree of domain splitting, which harms search engine optimization. Emerson has a tremendously due to their multi-year efforts at generating content and creating an engaged audience. The rest of the industry has a tall hill to climb, and few of them have even started. Conversions are the greatest weakness and largest opportunity. Visitors to the automation vendors' websites are given few, if any, calls to action, and I did not find a single instance of a landing page. It won't be easy to change. The automation industry faces 2 major challenges if they wish to do inbound marketing effectively. They are both significant hurdles, so while the answers are fairly simple, the solution most certainly won't be easy. Item 3. Operator paradox. Operator interface, annunciators, and alarm systems in large automation and processing plants have simply evolved from legacy systems. But effective management is overlooked. In the U.S. and developed countries, the shortage of experienced operators is compounded by the retirement of an aging workforce. In second and third world countries, which is where growth is occurring today, skilled operators are simply not available. So, when the term operator interface is used, who is the operator? And where does one find enough good operators to operate the system? And how long does it take to train them? What is needed is for the system to learn continuously from operator experiences, normal and abnormal, and that learning should remain in the system, minimizing dependence on experienced human operators. The operator paradox is this. Improved effectiveness comes not just from training operators to use increasingly more complex systems, but also from developing systems that adapt effectively to maximize throughput with minimal operator involvement. If operators cannot be trained to use the system must adapt to the needs of available operators. Item 4. The decline of offshore outsourcing. The great rush to outsource jobs to lower-cost labor centers on the other side of the globe appears to slowing down. The actual number of jobs outsourced will continue to creep up, but especially in the U.S., the new wave of outsourcing and relocating jobs is happening at home. Typically, these are the kinds of jobs that are considered core to the business, and they require much higher skills and training than what is typically available offshore. That won't really change much anytime soon. What's interesting about onshoring is that it's not in competition with offshoring or outsourcing. By and large, the jobs that have left will not come back. The exceptions are the high-level jobs that were originally sent offshore with poor results. Those jobs are coming back. Many companies are not shifting IT work to onshore and offshore outsourcing providers as fast as they can because many now realize they made mistakes in some earlier outsourcing decisions and are bringing work back. Will this pulling away from outsourcing continue? Likely. Item 5. Crowdsourcing. Digital meritocracy. Crowdsourcing is the act of outsourcing tasks, traditionally performed by an employee or contractor to an undefined, large group of people or community. A crowd. Through an open call. The concept of crowdsourcing depends essentially on the fact that because it is an open call, it gathers those who are most fit to perform tasks, solve complex problems, and contribute with the most relevant and fresh ideas. As the amount of digital work increases, and the amount of physical work decreases, our notions of employment and work change profoundly. Digital work doesn't require roads and factories, it requires computers, and an internet connection, equipment, that people have access to almost anywhere. The need for offices, supervisors, and rigid employment arrangements disappears. As technology improves, companies will be able to access the perfect person for a given job, the one who will do the job the best, enjoy it the most, or do it the fastest. All these factors combine in a way that will change the landscape of work. Articles, portfolios, presentations, and papers by potential job candidates are increasingly found online. Internet companies like Odesk and Elance rate workers based on past work rather than on what college they attended. Individuals become their own companies, responsible for marketing themselves, negotiating their rates, and deciding which work to pursue. People with unique skills will be paid what those skills are worth in the open market. Everyone who is capable of doing good work will have access to as many jobs as are available. And they can pick and choose. There will be a global decrease in unemployment. This extrapolation is counterintuitive, but consider this. Google, Amazon, and other high-tech companies are actually pushing for new jobs with more human involvement. These kinds of jobs didn't exist before. This is the future of work. As usual, there are three feedbacks in this issue of E-News. Feedback 1. Dan Trudeau appreciated my recommendation of the book, Lights in the Tunnel. Dan wrote, "I think this book addresses the crux of our economic problems. Most of the solutions people are offering to our economic woes revolve around keeping our previous economic model afloat. The problem now is the production process is commoditized. Anyone can do it anywhere. On top of that, with the advent of the information age, you need less and less people to get things done. When these processes are commoditized, so are the people who work on them. Instead of working hard to protect this model, we need to create a new one, while keeping some structures in place to dampen the blow of the transition. I wish I were more confident about this being done, but you don't even see the conversation happening in the public space. If we are to make any progress, we need to get people educated on the topic. It's the only thing that will push the decision makers forward. Feedback 2. Brett Truett was reading his latest copy of Jimbimbo.com e-news while visiting in Shanghai, China. Brett wrote, "Just want to say hello, and how much I love your information and writing. This month I'm reading your e-news in Shanghai, China. Attempting to gain a foothold selling to, and buying to, and from China. In addition, getting closer to buying a very small machine shop in Frankfurt, Germany. Your writing seems very in tune with my efforts. While my small firm deals in little, bent pieces of metal and molded plastic, I'm envisioning wonderful ways that combine much of what you write about. So, our little micro-global firm leaves most fabricators way behind in our little niche anyway. My biggest drawback? Myself and my inventor's mind, not always the best tool for all else that must be done. However, reading your e-news and opinions this AM in Shanghai, Labor Day in China, after a nice morning coffee, and manufacturing industry news clippings outside a cafe really makes me happy, and hopeful, not only for my company, but the world's future too. Jim, here's hoping you're turned off and enjoying birds' voices." Feedback 3. My old friend and colleague Tony Bowker sent this about 3D printing. Says Tony, "I was surprised that you wrote that 3D printing is currently used just by hobbyists and in a few academic and industrial niches. My Formula One friends have been doing exactly that for about 7 to 8 years. There was a video of the Red Bull team generating suspension parts. It looks like they grow out of the resin. I think Vantage have been doing it even longer. I'm not sure, but I suspect Boeing are doing 3D printing for 777 parts. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Send your email to Jim@jimpinto.com. Thank you.